the Shabbos is Shabbos Nevarchim. And when you think about the days that highlight different months of the year, Tu B'Shvat is a funny one. Tu B'Shvat is a funny one because, as we'll have a chance to dig into in slightly more detail in a couple of minutes, Tu B'Shvat is not really Yom Tov. Tu B'Shvat is really, essentially, in certain senses, the halachic equivalent of April 15th. The 15th of Shvat is like April 15th, a couple of months after the beginning of the year, 15th of the month, and really, in many ways, a tax day. It has to do with fiscal calculations of giving trumas. As Masos will talk about soon, and so the first thing that strikes you is that Hilchos Tu B'Shvat appears in Siman Kuf Lamed Aleph in Or HaChaim. That's one of the simanim about the halachas of Tachnun. And the Shulchan Aruch says, written 500 years ago, Rabbi Yosef Kara writes, a list of, in Siman Kuf Lamed Aleph Se'if Vav, a list of days that you don't say Tachanun. You don't say Tachanun, he says, on Tu B'Av, and Tu B'Shvat, Rosh Chodesh, etc., etc. Several other days, which you don't say, not only do we not say Tachanun on Shabbos Yom Tov, and in Chol HaMoed, even sort of the lesser Yom Tovim. Hanukkah, Purim, Rosh Chodesh. And then Tu B'Shvat's on that list too. That's sort of the extent of Hilchos Tu B'Shvat in Shulchan Aruch is we don't say Tachanun. Where does it come from? To take a look, the Maamar Kamos in front of you, the Beis Yosef, is by the same author of the Shulchan Aruch, but while Shulchan Aruch is Yosef Karo's code of law, Beis Yosef is a commentary that he wrote on the tour, an earlier Sefer Halacha, in which he gives the background typically for the halachos, the psukos that appear in Shulchan Aruch. So here you see the paragraphs here. The second paragraph is the beginning of a long, long paragraph. Is Elishon Shibale Halakit, only a little bit of it made it onto the page, that Shibale Halakit is a long paragraph where he goes through the entire calendar. These days and those days and Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed and Yalbi and Purim and Chanukah and how about the day before and how about the days that follow, the week that follows, Shavuos, yes or no, and how about the rest of the Chodesh Nisan, takes you through the whole calendar, the Shibale Halakit, long, long, it goes down to the end of the page. Shibale Halakit doesn't say anything about Tu B'Shvat. Little brief paragraph at the beginning, Kosav HaRokeach, or the early Chachmei Ashkenaz, Rabbi Eliezer HaRokeach writes that Tu B'Av, we do say Tachan. Okay, we do say Tachan Tu B'Av. Doesn't even say anything about Tu B'Shvat. And then the Beis Yosef himself, Yosef Kara writes, in between quoting earlier Rishonim with their lengthy lists of days which are Yamim Tovim or semi Yamim Tovim, in which we do not say Tachanun, Achshav Nohagu Olam Shloli Po Apneihem Bo V'lo V'Tu B'Shvat. Even though the Rokeach wrote in the 1200s that we do say Tu B'Av is not enough of a Yom Tov to warrant dropping Tachanun, but the minhag in the 1500s, Beis Yosef writes, is we accept even Tu B'Av, a very slight Yom Tov, as a day which you don't say Tachanun, as well as Tu B'Shvat. Also, this seems to be the first mention of Tu B'Shvat as a day that we celebrate. Is a Beis Yosef writing 500 years ago, we don't say Tachanun Tu B'Shvat either, even though it's not listed by the Rishonim, Shehu Rosh Hashanah Lilonos. Because after all, that's a Rosh Hashanah for trees. It is not Megillah Tanis. It's not Megillah Tanis. It's Rosh Hashanah for trees. Question, well, what does that mean? Let's appreciate Rosh Hashanah for trees means that we'll get into in a couple of moments when you try to determine what year any given crop belongs to. These apples, are they going to be taxed, so to speak? Are they going to fall under the rubric of Truma Samarasa together with last year's crop or next year's crop? So Tu B'Shvat is an important demarcation line. Doesn't sound like a Yom Tov. So what is it that we're saying? And Rishonim didn't consider Yom Tov. But the Beis Yosef begins to describe some sort of minhag that developed more recently to give Tu B'Shvat some significance. If we can crack that code, perhaps it'll give us insight into not only understanding the halacha, the minhag, that we leave out Tachanun 3 weeks from today in Tu B'Shvat, perhaps also give us some insight into how one can gain and where one should seek to, what the themes of Tu B'Shvat, and how we can leverage them for our own personal growth. So, I heard from Rabbi Schechter a number of years ago, he made one suggestion, and I'd like to share another suggestion as well. The Shechter said, it's not really a Yom Tov, it's really a day with technical halachic significance. Maybe Kalal Yisrael had been in Galus for so many years, over 1,000 years in Galus, the Kalal Yisrael was seeking a way to reinforce our sense of connection to Eretz Yisrael. And so this is 1,500, well over 1,000 years, close to 1,500 years out of Eretz Yisrael, we're looking for a way to sort of like give something to hold on to. The significance of Tu B'Shvat is, has to do with Trumas and Masras and so forth, the agricultural mitzvahs which apply only in Eretz Yisrael. So as such, it's a day that's Eretz Yisrael connected, so perhaps Klal Yisrael made it into a little bit of a Yom Tov. What does a little bit of a Yom Tov mean? So, we don't say Tachanun. Magen Avraham quotes old Ashkenazi minig to try to eat some more fruit on Tu B'Shvat, which before the days of modern refrigeration and transportation was actually a feat. To actually have fruit to eat at the end of the winter, that usually meant eating dried fruit or eating jam or something like that. But meaning to go out of our way to eat fruit on Tu B'Shvat, why? Perhaps it's to maintain that connection to Eretz Yisrael, the first Zionist holiday, so to speak. Perhaps that's the significance of it. There may be something else as well that will require digging for a couple of minutes into a little more detail into some of the halachas of Tu B'Shvat, and as we begin to look, we may see some patterns which are halachically fascinating and perhaps hashkafically meaningful as well. So I keep talking about the Tu B'Shvat as a tax day. Tu B'Shvat is the beginning of the fiscal year. So for trees, so what does this all mean? So it works like this. To make a long story short, when we look at the halachas that govern crops in Eretz Yisrael, so many of them hinge on what's identifying what year's crop this is. Is this cucumber Tavshinayin Ches cucumber or Tavshinayin Tes cucumber? Is this peach a Tavshinayin Ches peach or Tavshinayin Tes peach? Why does it matter? So, for instance, here's where I guess gets closest to the Sor L'Havdil, the thinking of April 15th, is a Jewish farmer in Eretz Yisrael needs to separate percentages of his crop, and it goes towards Truma, Master Rishon, Master Sheni, and so on and so forth. It goes to different places. Then the remainder, the farmer can keep for his own use. Which Masros you're giving varies from year to year a bit. As well, right? Master Sheni, Master Ani varies by the year. And in the large, you have to handle each one separately. If I haven't given Maser, I have a silo of grain that's been sitting there, and I've just been tossing in more and more, adding to this pile for the last 2-3 years, I'm going to have a problem because I need to take off Truma Maser for each year separately. I could take a handful of wheat as Truma for a pile of wheat only if they're both Tavshinayin Ches, or they're both Tavshinayin Ches. Each year's crop needs to be kept distinct and separate. So it's important to know, how do I identify the crops? So the crops aren't, plants aren't necessarily yekas, and don't necessarily, get planted after Rosh Hashanah and make sure to be picked before the next Rosh Hashanah. This is organic, it sort of flows.
Perhaps the farmers are
Even Yekesha farmers won't necessarily plant after Rosh Hashanah and pick before Rosh Hashanah. You got to deal with the realities of climate. So oftentimes things will start growing in one year and finish their growth in a different year. Right? So there has to be some point where you say, boom, that what determines is it last year's or this year's. With respect to Trumas and Masras, with respect as well as the halachas of Orla, the 3 years, the first 3 years that a fruit tree is growing, the fruit has special status, the fourth year has special status. So how do you define what year are we up to? So typically, for grain, for vegetables, there's a point in the development, either it's the picking or some earlier point in the development, and we want to see, was that point reached before Rosh Hashanah, Aleph Tishrei, or after Rosh Hashanah? If it happened before Rosh Hashanah, then it's last year's crop. If that point is only reached after Rosh Hashanah, that's identified as the next year. So we'll get to that moment, exactly.
Does it make a difference because certain crops will cycle 2 or 3 or 4 times throughout the year as opposed to other crops which will only have one fruit?
That's a great question. So if you have something that you can plant several times.
Citrus fruits, oranges, cherries, only have one throughout the year. Has up to four cycles.
Winter wheat, summer wheat, right. So if you're doing multiple cycles, some of them are simple. Because if I planted it at Kislev and I picked it Pesach time, so clearly I can see what year it is. The question only comes up when I have, whether it's once a year or more, but if I have something that begins growing before Rosh Hashanah, ends its growth after Rosh Hashanah, that's what I need to figure out. So if it's vegetables, I look at just when you pick it. If it's grain, I look at an earlier stage in development. But either way, I'm looking at whatever that point in time is, that defining point in time, did it happen before Alef Tishrei or after Alef Tishrei? The exception, yeah?
No. No, and I mean, Tzad Arla, like when you have certain fruits and other things like that, right? I'm not sure, but like when you have a lot of stuff that grows today in greenhouses, right? Mm-hmm. Now we have fresh vegetables here. You can actually get more than one cycle because it goes through seemingly the simulated seasons.
Right.
So in Tzad Arla, how does that work?
Don't remember for sure, but I believe Arla also is driven by the years. Even if you get it both ways, there'll be many trees that don't produce any fruit for more than 3-4 years. That's fine. There's never an Arla issue. It's just a question of time on the calendar. So I need the fruits that are identified as being from year 5 and on are totally fine. Year 4 is Revai, and the first 3 years is Arla, if there are fruits, however much fruit might grow then. Now here's the thing, coming back to the wrinkle with trees. Is that the point that we're looking at is called Chanata. And the point we're looking at is Chanata. And the date that we're looking at is Tu B'Shvat. We're not looking at whether Chanata occurs before or after Rosh Hashanah. It doesn't occur anywhere near Rosh Hashanah. It occurs several months later. What we're looking at is, does the Chanata of these fruit, an early stage in the development of the fruit, does that occur before Tu B'Shvat or after Tu B'Shvat? If the Chanata occurs now, we're several months into Tav Shinayin Tes. But if the Chanata of a fruit occurs today, it's considered to be fruit of Tav Shinayin Ches. Because from a fruit perspective, we're still in Tav Shinayin Ches. The Tav Shinayin Tes fiscal year for fruit begins on Tu B'Shvat. So if the Chanata will occur after Tu B'Shvat, then it's Tav Shinayin Tes fruit. If it occurs before Tu B'Shvat, that peach is last year's crop. Tavshin Ayin Ches. I believe, I've been looking at this a little bit. Everyone talks about Chanata, few actually define it. I believe it's an early stage in the budding of the fruit. Budding, blossoming? Is it maybe it's a blossoming? Maybe it's a blossoming.
There's different terminology.
Right, so I'm trying to get clarity. I need more Israeli halachas for him. I was not able to get my hands on. That would actually deal with the... Right.
Question is that flowering?
So I'm not sure. I'm not sure. We got to find out.
It's like in something. I think by grain is when it takes root.
Or havoah shlish, perhaps when it reaches the third.
When it takes root. I think vegetables are when you pick them.
Vegetables, lakita, yeah. So let's just sharpen our focus on the fruit in particular, tree fruit. Peiros Elon, so that the point that we're looking at is Chanata, and the date that we're looking at, rather than Rosh Hashanah, is 4.5 months later, Tu B'Shvat. So that's what we mean when we say it's Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. That's when the fiscal year, so to speak, begins for tree fruit, on Tu B'Shvat, rather than on Alef Tishrei. So number one, we now appreciate the opening question even more. This is fascinating halacha. If one's a Jewish farmer in Eretz Yisrael, very practical, very important, not celebratory, not sad, not festive, it's tax day. It's April 15th. Right? This is relevant to the halachas of Trumas and Masos.
Do we know why there's a distinction between...
Great. So let's dig a little more. What's strange also, there's a Talmud of the Brisker Rav, and in analyzing this, hopefully we're gonna harness the kochos of Brisk and Chassidus together over the next couple of minutes. The Talmud of the Brisker Rav, Rabbi Ilei Pomeranchik, who wrote several svarim, he actually grew up in the town of Brisk. Brisk apparently was not just a conception. Brisk was a real town with, like, you know, mothers and fathers and babies and no doubt cows and horses and donkeys also. And there were little kids who played in the playground in Brisk and went to the cheder in Brisk. And Rabbi Ilei Pomeranchik was born in Brisk, spent not just a few months, but years and years learning by the Brisker Rav. He was the local yeshiva was Brisker Rav. So he spent many years. And he has several svarim, one of which is an entire sefer dedicated to the halachas of agricultural mitzvah tzulis baris, Torah Zeran, dedicated to Seder Zeran, in which he makes the following point. He says, you know, what's strange is the question of why. The question of why. Why is it that Tu B'Shvat, as David was just asking, why is Tu B'Shvat relevant? So the Gemara takes it up. He has a lot to say. I want to I want to excerpt just a little bit of what he says. I'm glad to show you if you want to dig more over the course of the day where you could look. If you turn to the page over, Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Aleph and Aleph, the Gemara, actually the Mishnah talks about Rosh Hashanah Lilanos, Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, whether it's Be'echad B'Shvat or B'Chamisha Asur B'Shvat. We follow Beis Hillel as Tu B'Shvat. Either way, the Gemara wants to know that's many months off of Echad B'Tishrei. My timer. Amr Belazar, Amr Boshaya, Hol V'Yatzu Rov Gishmei Shana. Well, most of the rain has already fallen. Most of the rain has already fallen. And therefore, so Rav Arli Parmarashik points out, if you look at Tosis and at Rashi, they seem to give two different ways of looking at it. Rashi says, yeah, most of the rain has already fallen at this point, and by Tu B'Shvat, and that's why that's such a critical moment in the development of the fruits. And that's why that sort of takes over. That becomes the Rosh Hashanah. Rashi says, "Kvar ovar rov yemos hadyashamim shuzman revia va'ola hasraf be'ilanos." This is when the sap begins to rise. V'nimtzu aperos chon tamiata. And that's why the blossoming or whatever chanata is will begin to occur right now. This is Rosh Hashanah. This is the time that matters. This is the stage that matters. Straightforward. Okay, so that's the way it is. Trees are different. Tosis, however, gives a more subtle approach. Tosis says, "Kol achanutim here in Dir Maslo be'echad, kol achanutim kodem zman hazeh, haynu al gishmei shana shelifnei tishrei." What Tosis seems to say, he's very delicate about it. Rav Arile Parmarchik says, read that line slowly and carefully. What Tosis just said is, it's not really about Tu B'Shvat. It's really that if chanata is occurring now, let's say the blossoming, if that's what chanata is occurring now, if it's happening today, at the end of Teves, that means that that's a fruit that was fed primarily by the rain that fell in Av and Elul, 4.5 months ago. If the blossoming only occurs after Tu B'Shvat, that means that it's being driven largely by the rain that fell afterwards. Fascinating.
Afterwards.
Yeah. So that is definitely a difficulty in Tosis. That's definitely a difficulty in Tosis because we know that the rain generally fell, as the Mishnahis tell us, in Cheshvan and on. So I'm not sure whether he means rain that fell much, much earlier, not of an Elul, but last Adar. Maybe. Maybe other. I'm not sure. It's a question we got to think about. It's something that's Omer Darsheni. And you don't need to be a farmer at all to know that. All you need to do is learn the opening of Mishnayos and Tanis to know that the rain doesn't fall in the summertime. And if rain does fall in the summertime, it's something we're very unhappy about. Even Sukkos, we're very unhappy about the rain. So maybe it's, as David saying, has to do with other moisture. The point that Tosa is making subtly but clearly is that it's not real. Unlike Rashi, who said Tu B'Shvat is, there's a halacha that Tu B'Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah. Tu B'Shvat is not really the Rosh Hashanah. The Rosh Hashanah really is Rosh Hashanah. It's the same as any other fruit. It's just that apparently whatever is going on inside, the deep inside the tree, is not near la'ayin. I can't directly observe. I can directly, there's not that much structure, encasing the vegetables or encasing the grain. So I can see whatever stage in development I'm looking at, I can see it directly on the vegetable. I can see what I need to see Rosh Hashanah time. I cannot see what I need to see Rosh Hashanah time in the tree because everything's going on deep inside the tree trunk. So I can, what the importance of Tu B'Shvat is, while I'll see what's happening Tu B'Shvat time, that will tell me what was really going on 4.5 months earlier, Rosh Hashanah time, inside the tree. Was there already enough moisture to drive the development of these fruits even before Hashanah came in? Is it really being driven by Tafshin Ayin Ches moisture, or did it need the Tafshin Ayin Tes rain to kickstart this fruit? So again, while for Rashi, it really is about Tu B'Shvat, and that's a special halacha, perhaps even halacha Moshe B'Sinai, that Tu B'Shvat became the Rosh Hashanah. For Tosis, it's not about Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is a way, Tu B'Shvat is, it's really about Rosh Hashanah, but Tu B'Shvat is when the impact of Rosh Hashanah becomes apparent. I can only observe now, 4.5 months later, what was going on 4.5 months ago deep within the trunk. And he points out time doesn't allow us to read within. You can take, he points out that the Yerushalmi seems to debate this as well. Many centuries before Rashi and Tosis, it seems like it was a machlokas. It seems like it was a machlokas Rabbi Ela and Rabbi Ahoshaya. Early Amoraim and Eretz Yisrael were debating this very point. Is it about what's happening in Rosh Hashanah time, or is it about what's happening right now? So if you think about this, I think this speaks to a larger thematic issue also. There are two ways of looking at Tu B'Shvat. You can look at Tu B'Shvat in terms of, you see the growth that's happening right now. I'm growing, I'm working, and I can see now what's happening. The Tu B'Shvat, the other perspective Tu B'Shvat speaks to, often growth isn't immediately apparent. And often there could be things that change me and that move me that will need to percolate within for a while before the impact is, before the results are apparent. Not all inspiration is immediately, obviously consequential. Sometimes things sit within for a while, and only later I'll know now where, sometimes people ask me, how was your Yom Kippur? I don't know. I'll know, I'll tell you next year, right? It's true physically, it's true spiritually. Because if one's putting pieces into place, so that sometimes it happens right away. But I think one of the ideas that Tu B'Shvat brings to the fore is of appreciation of the value of process, which Jonathan, I'm glad to say that Jonathan spoke to me about this past Shabbos, and appreciate, but that's sort of the philosophy of the halacha of Tu B'Shvat, is recognizing that sometimes we do things and they impact immediately, sometimes we do things that need to ferment. And I would end with the following two points. A bit of chassidus and a bit of a practicality. I'm grateful to Benji Rubin, who when we were talking about this this Torah Zeram a couple of weeks ago, pointed me to a piece in the Ishbitzer's Sefer Beis Yaakov, where he speaks about, thinking about winter and summer, and night and day as capturing that same idea. Over the course of the winter in general, of which Tu B'Shvat perhaps is emblematic, you don't see a lot happening outside. But you will know in the summer, springtime and summertime, we'll be able to see the sort of gathering of kochos that was happening now. And he says if you sleep at night, so you're awake during the day, so that's a good thing to do. And night and day also capture that. If you get your sleep at night, so nothing's active is happening at night, but you're gathering strength for your gathering potential that you're then going to put into play over the course of the day. So that those symbolize the kochos HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us and the way in which we can leverage and actualize those kochos. So I would leave you practically with the following two snippets of Mesillas Yesharim. Mesillas Yesharim talks about the first two major areas for growth, the first two steps on the rungs on the ladder. Mesillas Yesharim describes, or Zahiris, the Gemara describes, Zahiris and Zrizus, which he understands to be living contemplatively, living thoughtfully and self-reflectively. That's Zahiris. And Zrizus is living with energy, operating with enthusiasm. One might say, though he never uses that terminology directly, Yira and Ahava. Living thoughtfully, not just sort of going through life on autopilot, that's Zahiris. And Zrizus is acting with excitement and enthusiasm. If I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if I care, if I'm emotionally engaged, what I'm doing, I'm not just going to check in, check out. And he, for each, there's a point, I think, that speaks to this, and a point perhaps that between now and Tu B'Shvat, we can let percolate ourselves and see how we can build them into our spiritual personality. When he talks about the three major obstacles to really getting onto a program of growth and becoming a more contemplative, self-reflective person, he says, often the most obvious obstacle is just never having time to think. We're so busy doing, and we're so busy on the treadmill, and Baruch Hashem offered good things, neutral things, good things, but so busy doing, we never take that time to think. Like the cab driver who's so busy driving, he never wants to take out a half hour to change the oil because he's going to miss fares. But obviously, sooner or later, it's going to come back to bite you because if you don't take that time for maintenance, in the long run, you're going to lose a lot more time. If we never carve out the 15 minutes a week to get off the treadmill and stop and think about where am I actually going and what's working, what's not working, what are the goals, am I angled properly towards those goals, if I never take that time to think, I'm going to end up being so much less productive. That and the appreciating that the taking that time to think, that sort of inobvious process ends up making me far more productive in the long run. The carbon at that time for cheshbon nefesh. And the other point, when he talks about zerizos, there's also, he says, when you talk about acting with enthusiasm, so you often think of zerizos as being, you know, running to do the mitzvah. He says that's one half of it, is running to get started. The other half of it is being energetic and seeing things through, once things are started, through to the end. Which definitely speaks to this appreciation of process. So many of us, myself included, well, now some people are closers, but many of us are starters. We'll be very excited to get the initiative rolling. But to see it through and to do the work, the day-to-day, week-to-week, to keep our projects and our goals on track, that's often more of a challenge. That's where Tu B'Shvat comes in. That's that sense of, as the Ishbitzer describes, of nighttime, of wintertime, the gathering, the kochos, where there's no razzle-dazzle, but the doing the work step by step and maintain that consistency. And as Ramchal talks about in Parakei, it's carving out the time to think and to plan and to recalibrate. And that's what can lead us, as a good Tu B'Shvat will, ultimately from sap and a quiet, dormant-looking tree into the great fruit that we hope to produce in the coming months.